all the Akechis, and now the last of them, poor Mariko. But what she did saved Torunaga, if God wills it. Alvito's fingers touched his rosary. After a moment he said, "Also, pilot, also before I go, I want to apologize for... Well, I'm glad the Father Visitor was there to save you."
"You apologize for my ship, too?"
"Not for the Erasmus, though I had nothing to do with that. I apologize only for those men, Pissarro and the Captain General. I'm glad your ship's gone."
"Shigata ganai, Father. Soon I'll have another."
"What kind of craft will you try to build?"
"One big enough and strong enough."
"To attack the Black Ship?"
"To sail home to England and defend myself against anyone."
"It will be a waste, all that labor."
"There'll be another act of God?"
"Yes, or sabotage."
"If there is, and my new ship fails, I'm going to build another. And if that fails, another. I'm going to build a ship or get a berth, and when I get back to England, I'm going to beg or borrow or buy or steal a privateer. And then I'm coming back."
"Yes, I know. That's why you will never leave. You know too much, Anjin-san. I told you that before, and I say it again, but with no malice. Truly. You're a brave man, a fine adversary, one to respect, and I do. And there should be peace between us. We're going to see a lot of each other over the years, if any of us survive the war."
"Are we?"
"Yes. You're too good at Japanese. Soon you'll be Torunaga's personal interpreter. We shouldn't quarrel, you and I. I'm afraid our destinies are interlocked. Did Mariko-san tell you that too?"
"She told me."
"No, she never said that. What else did she tell you?"
"She begged me to be your friend, to protect you if I could." "Anjin-san, I didn't come here to goad you, or to quarrel, but to ask a peace before I go."
"Where are you going?"
"First to Nagasaki, by ship from Mishima. There are trade negotiations to conclude. Then to wherever Torunaga is, wherever the battle will be."
"They'll let you travel freely in spite of the war?"
"Oh, yes. They need us, whoever wins. Surely we can be reasonable men and make peace, you and I. I ask it because of Mariko-sama."
Blackthorn said nothing for a moment.
"Once we had a truce because she wanted it. I'll offer you that. A truce, not a peace, providing you agree not to come within 50 miles of where my shipyard is."
"I agree, pilot. Of course I agree. But you've nothing to fear from me. A truce, then, in her memory."
Alvito put out his hand.
"Thank you."
Blackthorn shook the hand firmly. Then Alvito said,
"Soon her funeral will take place at Nagasaki. It's to be in the cathedral. The Father Visitor will say the service himself, Anjin-san. Part of her ashes are to be entombed there."
"That would please her."
Blackthorn watched the wreck for a moment, then looked back at Alvito.
"One thing I didn't mention to Torunaga. Just before she died, I gave her a benediction as a priest would, and the last rites as best I could. There was no one else, and she was Catholic. I don't think she heard me. I don't know if she was conscious. And I did it again at her cremation. Would that be the same? Would that be acceptable? I tried to do it before God, not mine or yours, but God."
"No, Anjin-san, we are taught that it would not. But 2 days before she died, she asked for and received absolution from the Father Visitor, and she was sanctified."
Then she knew all along she had to die. Whatever happened, she was a sacrifice.
"Yes. God bless her and cherish her."
"Thank you for telling me," Blackthorn said. I've... I was always worried my intercession would never work, though I... Thank you for telling me.
Sayonara, Anjin-san, Alvito said, offering his hand again.
Sayonara, Tsuku-san. Please, light a candle for her. From me?
I will.
Blackthorn shook the hand and watched the priest walk away, tall and strong, a worthy adversary.
We'll always be enemies, he thought. We both know it, truce or no truce. What would you say if you knew Torunaga's plan and my plan? Nothing more than you've already threatened, eh? Good. We understand each other. A truce will do no harm. But we won't be seeing much of each other, Tsuku-san. While my ships are building, I'll take your place as interpreter with Torunaga and the regents, and soon you'll be out of trade negotiations, even while Portuguese ships carry the silk. And all that'll change, too. My fleet will only be the beginning. In 10 years, the Lion of England will rule these seas. But first the lady, then all the rest.
Contentedly, Blackthorn walked back to Naga and settled plans for tomorrow, then climbed the slope to his temporary house, near Torunaga. There he ate rice and slivered raw fish that one of his cooks had prepared for him, and found them delicious. He took a second helping and began to laugh.
Sire?
Nothing.
But in his head, he was seeing Mariko and hearing her say,
Oh, Anjin-san, one day perhaps we'll even get you to like raw fish, and then you'll be on the road to Nirvana, the place of perfect peace.
Ah, oh, Mariko, he thought, I'm so glad about the real absolution. And I thank thee.
For what, Anjin-san?
He could hear her say.
For life, Mariko, my darling. Thou?
Many times during the days and the nights, he would talk to her in his head, reliving parts of their life together, and telling her about today, feeling her presence very close, always so close that once or twice he had looked over his shoulder, expecting to see her standing there.
I did that this morning, Mariko. But instead of you, it was Buntaro, Tsuku-san beside him, both glaring at me. I had my sword, but he had his great bow in his hands. Eee, my love, it took all my courage to walk over and greet them formally. Were you watching? You would have been proud of me. So calm and samurai, and petrified. He said so stiffly, talking through Tsuku-san, Lady Kiritsubo and the Lady Sazuko have informed me how you protected my wife's honor and theirs, how you saved her from shame and them. I thank you, Anjin-san. Please excuse my vile temper of before. I apologize and thank you. Then he bowed to me and went away. And I wanted you so much to be there, to know that everything's protected and no one will ever know.
Many times Blackthorn had looked over his shoulder, expecting her there. But she was never there, and never would be, and this did not disturb him. She was with him forever, and he knew he would love her in the good times and in the tragic times, even in the winter of his life. She was always on the edge of his dreams. And now those dreams were good, very good, and intermixed with her were drawings and plans and the carving of the figurehead and sails, and how to set the keel, and how to build the ship, and then, such joy, the final shape of the lady under full sail, bellied by a sharp sou'wester, racing up the channel, the bit between her teeth, halyards shrieking, spars stretched on a larboard tack, and then,
All sails ho! Topsails, mainsails, royals, and top-top-gallants!
Easing out the ropes, giving her every inch, the cannonade of the sails reaching on the other tack, and,
Steady as she goes!
Every particle of canvas answering his cry. And then, at long last, full-bodied, a lady of inestimable beauty turning hard a port near Beachy Head for London. Torunaga came up the rise near the camp, his party grouped around him. Kogo was on his gauntlet, and he had hunted the coast, and now he was going into the hills above the village. There were still 2 hours of sun left, and he did not want to waste the sun, not knowing when he would ever have the time to hunt again.
Today was for me, he thought. Tomorrow I go to war, but today was to put my house in order, pretending that the Kanto was safe and Isu safe, and my succession, that I will live to see another winter, and in the spring, hunt at leisure. Ah, today has been very good.
He had killed twice with Tetsuko, and she had flown like a dream, never so perfectly, not even when she'd made the kill with Naga near Anjiro. That beautiful, never-to-be-forgotten stoop to take that wily old cock pigeon. Today she had taken a crane several times her own size and came back to the lure perfectly. A pheasant had been pointed by the dogs, and he had cast the falcon to her circling station aloft. Then the pheasant had been flushed, and the soaring, climbing, falling had begun, to last forever, the kill beautiful. Again Tetsuko had come to the lure and fed from his fist proudly. Now he was after hare. It had occurred to him that the Anjin-san would enjoy meat. So, instead of finishing for the day, satisfied, Torunaga had decided to go for game for the pot. He quickened his pace, not wanting to fail. His outriders led the way past the camp and up the winding road to the crest above, and he was greatly pleased with his day. His critical gaze swept over the camp, seeking dangers, and found none. He could see men at weapon training. All regimental training and firing was forbidden while the Tsuku-san was nearby. And that pleased him. To one side, glinting in the sun, were the 20 cannon that had been salvaged with such care, and he noticed that Blackthorn was squatting cross-legged on the ground nearby, concentrating over a low table, now like any normal person would sit. Below was the wreck, and he noted that it had not yet moved, and he wondered how the Anjin-san would bring it ashore, if it could not be pulled ashore.
"Because, Anjin-san, you will bring it ashore," Torunaga told himself, quite certain. "Oh, yes. And you will build your ship, and I'll destroy her like I destroyed the other one, or give her away, another sop to the Christians, who are more important to me than your ships, my friend. So sorry. And the other ships waiting in your homeland. Your countrymen will bring those out to me, and the treaty with your queen. Not you. I need you here. When the time's right, Anjin-san, I'll tell you why I had to burn your ship, and by then you won't mind, because other things will be occupying you. And you'll understand what I told you was still the truth. It was your ship, or your life. I chose your life. That was correct, ne? Then we'll laugh about the act of God, you and I. Oh, it was easy to appoint a special watch of trusted men aboard, with secret instructions to spread gunpowder loosely and liberally on the chosen night. Having already told Naga, the moment Omi whispered about Yabu's plot, to rearrange the roster, so that the following shore and deck watch were only Izu men, particularly the 53 traitors. Then a single ninja with a flint out of the darkness, and your ship was a torch. Of course, neither Omi nor Naga was ever party to the sabotage. So sorry, but so necessary, Anjin-san. I saved your life, which you wanted even above your ship. 50 times or more I've had to consider giving your life away, but so far I've always managed to avoid it. I hope to continue to do that. Why? This is a day for truth, nay? The answer is, because you make me laugh, and I need a friend. I daren't make friends among my own people, or among the Portuguese. Yes, I will whisper it down a well at noon. But only when I'm certain I'm alone, that I need one friend. And also your knowledge. Mariko-sama was right again. Before you go, I want to know everything you know. I told you we both had plenty of time, you and I. I want to know how to navigate a ship around the Earth, and understand how a small island nation can defeat a huge empire. Perhaps the answer could apply to us and China, ne? Oh, yes. The Taiko was right in some things. The first time I saw you, I said, there's no excuse for rebellion. And you said, there's one if you win. Ah, Anjin-san, I bound you to me then. I agree. Everything's right if you win. Stupid to fail. Unforgivable. You won't fail. And you'll be safe and happy in your large fief at Anjiro, where Mura the fisherman will guard you from Christians and continue to feed them misinformation as I direct. How naive of Tsuku-san to believe one of my men, even Christian, would steal your rudders and give them secretly to the priests without my knowledge or my direction. Ah, Mura, you've been faithful for 30 years or more. Soon you'll get your reward. What would the priests say if they knew your real name was Akira Tonomoto, samurai, spy at my direction, as well as fisherman, headman, and Christian? They'd fart dust, ne? So don't worry, Anjin-san. I'm worrying about your future. You're in good, strong hands, and ah, what a future I've planned for you.
I'm to be consort to the barbarian. Oh, oh, oh!
Kiku had wailed aloud. Yes, within the month, Ujuko-san has formally agreed.
He had told Kiku and Gyoko the truth once more, patiently giving the distraught girl face.
And 1,000 koku a year after the birth of the Anjin-san's first son.
What did you say?
He'd repeated the promise and added sweetly,
after all, samurai is samurai, and two swords are two swords, and his sons will be samurai. Isatamoto, one of my most important vassals, admiral of all my ships, a close personal advisor, even a friend. Ne?
So sorry, but sire?
First, you'll be his consort.
So sorry. First, sire?
Perhaps you should be his wife. Ujuko-san told me she didn't wish to marry, ever again. But I think he should be married. Why not you? If you please him enough, and I imagine you could please him enough, and still dutifully keep him building his ship, eh? Yes, I think you should be his wife.
Oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes!
She had thrown her arms around him and blessed him and apologized for her impulsive bad manners for interrupting and not listening dutifully. And she had left him, walking 4 paces off the ground, where a moment ago she had been ready to throw herself off the nearest cliff.
Ah, ladies, Toranaga thought, bemused and very content. Now she's got everything she wants. So has Gyoko. If the ship's built in time, and it will be, so have the priests. So have... Sire!
One of the hunters was pointing at a clump of bushes beside the road. He reined in and readied Kogo, loosening the jesses that held her to his fist.
Now, he ordered softly.
The dog was sent in. The hare broke from the brush and raced for cover, and at that instant he released Kogo. With immensely powerful thrusts of her wings, she hurtled in pursuit, straight as an arrow, overhauling the panicked animal. Ahead, 100 paces across the rolling land, was a brambled copse, and the hare twisted this way and that with frantic speed, making for safety, Kogo closing the gap, cutting corners, knifing ever closer a few feet off the ground. Then she was above her prey, and she hacked down, and the hare screamed and reared up and darted back. Kogo still in pursuit, ek-ek-ekking, with rage because she had missed. The hare whirled again in a final dash for sanctuary and shrieked as Kogo struck again and got a firm grip with her talons on its neck and head and bound on fearlessly, closing her wings, oblivious of the animal's frantic contortions and tumblings, as effortlessly she snapped the neck. A last scream. Kogo let go and leaped into the air for an instant, and shook her ruffled feathers into place again with a violent flurry, then settled back onto the warm, twitching body, talons once more in the death grip. Then, and only then, did she give her shriek of conquest, and hiss with pleasure at the kill. Her eyes watched Toranaga. Toranaga trotted up and dismounted, offering the lure. Obediently, the goshawk left her prey, and then, as he deftly concealed the lure, she settled on his outstretched gauntlet. His fingers caught her jesses, and he could feel her grip through the steel-reinforced leather of the forefinger perch.
"Yee! That was well done, my beauty," he said, rewarding her with a morsel, part of the hare's ear that Abita sliced off for him. "There! Gorge on that! But not too much! You've still work to do!"
Grinning, the beater held up the hare.
"Master, it must be 3-4 times her weight. Best we've seen for weeks, nay?" "Yes. Send it to the camp for the engine, son."
Toranaga swung into the saddle again and waved the others forward to the hunt once more.
Yes, the kill had been well done, but it had none of the excitement of a peregrine kill. A goshawk's only what it is, a cook's bird, a killer, born to kill anything and everything that moves. Like you, Anjin San, eh? Yes, you're a short-winged hawk. Ah, but Mariko was peregrine.
He remembered her so clearly, and he wished beyond wishing that it had not been necessary for her to go to Osaka and into the void.
But it was necessary, he told himself patiently. The hostages had to be released. Not my kin, but all the others. Now I have another 50 allies committed secretly. Your courage and Lady Etsy's courage and self-sacrifice have bound them and all the maidens to my side, and through them, the whole western seaboard. Ishido had to be winkled out of his impregnable lair, the region split, and Ochiba and Kiyama broken to my fist. You did all this and more. You gave me time. Only time fashions snares and provides lures. Ah, Mariko-chan, who would have thought a little slip of a woman like you, daughter of Jusan Kubo, my old rival, the arch-traitor Akechi Jinsei, could do so much and wreak so much vengeance so beautifully and with such dignity on the Taiko, your father's enemy and killer. A single awesome stoop, like Tetsuko, and you killed all your prey, which are my prey. So sad that you're no more. Such loyalty deserves special favor.
Toranaga was at the crest now, and he stopped and called for Tetsuko. The falconer took Kogo from him, and Toranaga caressed the hooded peregrine on his fist a last time. Then he slipped her hood and cast her into the sky. He watched her spiral upward, ever upward, seeking a prey that he would never flush.
"Tetsuko's freedom is my gift to you, Mariko-san," he said to her spirit, watching the falcon circle higher and higher. "To honor your loyalty to me and your filial devotion to our most important rule, that a dutiful son or daughter may not rest under the same heaven while the murderer of her father still lives."
"Ah, so wise, sire," the falconer said.
"Eh?"
"To release Tetsuko, to free her. I thought the last time you flew her, she'd never come back, but I wasn't sure. Ah, sire, you're the greatest falconer in the realm, the best to know, to be so sure when to give her back to the sky."
Toranaga permitted himself a scowl. The falconer blanched, not understanding why, quickly offered Kogo back and retreated hastily.
"Yes, Tetsuko was due," Toranaga thought testily. "But even so, she was still a symbolic gift to Mariko's spirit and the quality of her revenge."
"Yes.
But what about all the sons of all the men you've killed?" "Ah, that's different," Those men all deserve to die, he answered himself. Even so, you're always wary of who comes within arrow range. That's normal prudence.
This observation pleased Toranaga, and he resolved to add it to the legacy. He squinted into the sky once more and watched the falcon, no longer his falcon. She was a creature of immense beauty up there, free, beyond all the tears, soaring effortlessly. Then some force beyond his ken took her and whirled her northward, and she vanished.
Ah, Tetsuko, thank you. Bear many daughters, he said, and turned his attention to the earth below.
The village was neat in the lowering sun, the Anjin-san still at his table, samurai training, smoke rising from the cooking fires. Across the bay, 20 li or so, was Edo. 40 ri southeast was Anjiro. 290 ri westward was Osaka, and north from there, barely 30 li, was Kyoto.
That's where the main battle should be, he thought. Near the capital. Northward, up around Gifu, or Ogaki, or Hashima, astride the Nakasendo, the Great North Road. Perhaps where the road turns south for the capital, near the little village of Sekigahara, in the mountains. Somewhere there. Oh, I'd be safe for years behind my mountains, but this is the chance I've waited for. Ishido's jugular is unprotected. My main thrust will be along the north road, and not the Tokaido, the coastal road, though between now and then I'll pretend to change 50 times. My brother will ride with me. Oh, yes, I think Zataki will convince himself Ishido has betrayed him to Kiyama. My brother's no fool, and I will keep my solemn oath to seek Ochiba for him. During the battle, Kiyama will change sides. I think he will change sides, and when he does, if he does, he will fall on his hated rival Onoshi. That will signal the guns to charge. I will roll up the sides of their armies, and I will win. Oh yes, I will win, because Ochiba, wisely, will never let the heir take the field against me. She knows that if she did, I would be forced to kill him. So sorry.
Toranaga began to smile secretly.
The moment I have won, I will give Kiyama all Onoshi's lands and invite him to appoint Tsurugi his heir. The moment I am president of the new Council of Regents, we will put Zataki's proposal to the Lady Ochiba, who will be so incensed at his impertinence that to placate the First Lady of the land and the heir, the Regents will regretfully have to invite my brother onward. Who should take his place as Regent? Kashigi Omi. Kiyama will be Omi's prey. Yes. That's wise, and so easy, because surely by that time, Kiyama, Lord of all the Christians, will be flaunting his religion, which is still against our law. The Taiko's expulsion edicts are still legal, ne? Surely Omi and the others will say, I vote the edicts be invoked. And once Kiyama is gone, never again a Christian regent, and patiently our grip will tighten on the stupid but dangerous foreign dogma that is a threat to the land of the gods, has always threatened our war. Therefore, must be obliterated. We regents will encourage the Anjin-san's countrymen to take over Portuguese trade. As soon as possible, the regents will order all trade and all foreigners confined to Nagasaki, to a tiny part of Nagasaki under very serious guards. And we will close the land to them forever, to them and to their guns and to their poisons. So many marvelous things to do, once I've won. If I win, when I win. We are a very predictable people. It will be a golden age, Ochiba and the heir will majestically hold court in Osaka, and from time to time we will bow before them and continue to rule in his name outside of Osaka Castle. Within 3 years or so, the Son of Heaven will invite me to dissolve the council and become shogun during the remainder of my nephew's minority. The regents will press me to accept, and, reluctantly, I will accept. In a year or two, without ceremony, I will resign in Sudara's favor and retain power as usual and keep my eyes firmly on Osaka Castle. I will continue to wait patiently, and one day those two usurpers inside will make a mistake, and then they will be gone, and somehow Osaka Castle will be gone. Just another dream within a dream, and the real prize of the great game that began as soon as I could think, which became possible the moment the Taiko died, the real prize will be won. The shogunate. That's what I fought for and planned for all my life. I alone am heir to the realm. I will be shogun, and I have started a dynasty. It's all possible now because of Mariko-san and the barbarian stranger who came out of the Eastern Sea. Mariko-san, it was your karma to die gloriously and live forever. Anjin-san, my friend, it is your karma never to leave this land. It is mine to be shogun.
Kogo the goshawk fluttered on his wrist and settled herself, watching him. Toranaga smiled at her.
I did not choose to be what I am. It is my karma.
That year, at dawn on the 21st day of the 10th month, the month without gods, the main armies clashed. It was in the mountains near Sekigahara, astride the north road, the weather foul, fog, then sleet. By late afternoon, Toranaga had won the battle, and the slaughter began. 40,000 heads were taken. 3 days later, Ishido was captured alive, and Toranaga genially reminded him of the prophecy and sent him in chains to Osaka for public viewing, ordering the Eta to plant the General Lord Ishido's feet firm in the earth, with only his head outside the earth, and to invite passers-by to saw at the most famous neck in the realm with a bamboo saw. Ishido lingered 3 days and died very old. This concludes the reading of Shogun, the Epic Novel of Japan, by James Clavell. Copyright 1975 by James Clavell. This book was read by Ralph Lister. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Leopard Publishing Company Limited and was produced in 2015 by Blackstone Audio Inc., which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio, Inc. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.